Hello again, friends. Welcome to My Back 40 and the My Back 40 podcast. I'm your host, Steve O'Shaughnessy. It's been a minute. I'm back. Hello. And I hope you're having a Merry Christmas. I'm not sure exactly when this is going to come out. Probably in the next day or two. Today is the 22nd today. Christmas is just a few days away. And I'm telling you, Christmas can be a really stressful time for a lot of different people. Not only is it hard this time of year because of the lack of light that we experience, Canadian winters and the long nights and the shorter days, which incidentally, as yesterday was winter solstice, from this point forward, days are going to be getting longer. That's not to say that they're going to be getting any warmer, but they're going to be getting longer. And I always feel that. I look forward to that. I'm one who I don't think is as adversely affected by the lack of daylight than a lot of people that I know quite personally. And I always try to reassure a special person in my life that days are getting longer. We're coming out the other side of those long nights, those long, cold nights. And spring, summer is just around the corner and we'll be back on our bikes. But I mean, I'm always on my bike, and maybe that's the difference. I don't know. I'm always riding a bike. I don't ski or snowboard because, well, I can't really afford it. I've kind of equated skiing and snowboarding at a resort similar to golf in terms of its expense. And you know, I have a fat bike and I can get out and ride. And just today I went out for a bit of a ride up in Invermere at the Lake Lillian Trails. And I could be mistaken, but I believe Justin Keach from the Columbia Valley Cycling Society was up there. He's volunteering, doing some grooming up there. And it was great. There was a good, you know what, to be honest, it's so funny. I think I might've ridden 6K and it felt like 20, you know, despite there being groomed trails, there were, I don't know, 2 or 3 inches of wet snow on top of that. And it's hard pushing and it's kind of like a concentrated workout training ride into a very short ride. Not sure if that's going to get me ready for the cold ride, which is coming up in February, which I would like to do, I think. I'm a bit intimidated by that, truth be told, but you know, I'm getting out anyway. So I just find that getting out on the bike, getting some fresh air really helps attenuate those feelings of depression that we can feel this time of year. And there was one moment today I was riding and I rolled into this patch of the most glorious sunshine coming across the Purcells, and I stopped, took my helmet off, I took my gloves off, I literally held my hands up toward the sun to try to get as much skin surface area exposed as possible to get as much vitamin D as I possibly could. But it felt really good to get out there and get a ride in. And, yeah, I'd encourage anyone. I always talk about this. If you don't have a fat bike, get a fat bike. I guess the other thing too, I wanted to just touch on is, again, going back to how this time of year can be pretty hard for people is, start reaching out to the people you love in your life and checking in on them. Cause again, this can be pretty hard on a lot of people. Christmas. It's not only just the seasonal affected depression side of things, but it's also the pressure people feel of stepping up to the plate and overextending themselves financially to buy gifts. I will admit this year for me, now that I have a job, I'm able to afford a bit more for my kids and I spoiled them a little bit this year. I mean, and when I say spoiled them, that doesn't mean I got them everything they wanted on their list, but I definitely got them things that were primarily kind of important to them. And I'm not going to talk about it because not that they listen to this, but I don't want to spoil it, but it can be a rough time of year. It's stressful for a lot of people. And if you have family coming over to your place that you need to entertain, or if you have you know, a bunch of gifts you need to buy for someone, you know, it's just a hard time of year for a lot of people. And it shouldn't. It's not what it's about. To me, Christmas has always been about getting together with family, eating and drinking too much, and exchanging thoughtful gifts with one another. And I think that's the most important part of it. It's just to tell people that you're thinking of them and that you want to spend time with them over this holiday season, I think is the most important part of the winter. And I think it's it's just, it helps people get through. I think it's as stressful as it can be. I think it's a wonderful thing to have. It's a wonderful celebration to have, just to bring people together through, again, these dark, long, cold nights. It's important that we get together. And then when summer comes, it'll all be just a memory. And we'll be moving forward to the next holiday, but there's always something on the horizon. But I just wanted to acknowledge the fact that this time of year can be really difficult for people. So if there's someone in your life that you haven't talked to for a while, I've been doing it. I've been reaching out to friends that I haven't talked to for a really long time, just to see what they're up to and shoot the shit a little bit with them. And it makes me feel good, and I hope it makes them feel good as well. So if there's someone you want to reach out to that's been on your mind, don't delay another moment. Do it now. And on the subject of gifts, I was thinking what a great gift it would be to give someone a Dynamic Cyclist membership. Buying gifts is really difficult. Being thoughtful about someone's, about buying a thoughtful gift for someone can be really difficult if you're not with that person all the time. If there's someone in your life who's an athlete who you know is training for something coming up in either the spring or the summer or maybe a winter ultra, get them a Dynamic Cyclist membership. If you drop the code MB40 at dynamiccyclist.com, you're going to save 25% on that membership. Not only will they get a free week, or will you get a free week because you're buying it as a gift, but that person will get, in the palm of their hand, they're going to get stretching, mobility, injury prevention, coaching programs. It's all on an app on their phone. It's a fantastic gift, and it's something that's a bit unique. I mean, you can go buy someone a gift card, but if you know for sure that someone's like, they wake up every day and they're stiff and they're sore and they're training, there's nothing like a Dynamic Cyclist membership to loosen the joints and to make them feel better and stronger on the bike. So don't forget dynamiccyclist.com. MB40 is going to save you 25%. And I think it's the perfect last minute gift idea. Check it out. I also want to thank, while we're at it, big sponsor of the show, Rolling Dell Cycles. Graham Mann, I had him on the podcast, a few back, and I don't know which version or which number it is, but go back through the archives. It's only two or three back, but we had a great conversation about Rolling Dell Cycle. Graham Mann is the new owner, operator of Rolling Dell Cycle, and I always talk about my bike Timber, and I'm not going to go on about it. If you're in the market for a bike, and these bikes are an investment, but they are a forever bike. And in this era of people switching bikes every year, I don't know. Buy a bike that's gonna last. Buy a bike that's gonna last you for the rest of your life. I'm gonna get buried with Timber. Such a special bike to me, and not only because I know who built it. I know the hands that built it. Dale Marchand built that bike. And I know the love and the care you put in. And I feel it when I ride the bike, the love and the care. And though Dale is not welding those frames himself anymore, Graham is in there welding them. You'll still feel the love and the energy and the time put into building the perfect rig for whatever you're using it for. Gravel, fat bike, mountain bike, bike packing, whatever, what have you. You can check out rdcycle.com and check out some of the beautiful rigs they have. And I'm not sure how backdated he is for builds, but if you're looking for something for the spring, I'm not going to say you're going to get it in the spring, but you might want to act on that now. So check out rdcycle.com, Rolling Dell Cycle, big sponsor of the show. And I can't thank Rolling Dell enough for supporting the My Back 40 podcast. What do I got going on today? Well, today, it's funny. I reached out very impromptu. I reached out to Andy Ward. It was recommended that I talk to Andy, and we had a great conversation. I really liked shooting the shit with that guy. And I reached out to Nathan Siemens, part of the Kootenai crew here. And I asked him if he would be so kind as to write up a intro / bio for Andy, and maybe hopefully this doesn't come from a place of laziness. I haven't had a lot of interaction with Andy. We've met on a couple races. Like I was interviewing the Lost Elephant last year. I met him. I think that's the year he was it last year. No, the year before, where he broke his finger, had a big crash. And he's just a really good dude. I had a really good chat, and I asked Nathan Siemens, who's a good friend of Andy, to write a intro for this dude. And here we go. Andy Ward is a ferocious beast with the energy and fervor of a Scottish red squirrel. His speed and race results may be the first thing that catch attention, but it is his boundless positivity and joy that everyone remembers. Andy is the first to offer encouragement. He loves nothing more than discussing gear choices and ride strategy, and he is right there to celebrate everyone's victories with equal stoke. Mr. Ward single-handedly blew the doors off the Lost Elephant by turning what was once a two-day race into a 35-hour race. Many people will never forgive him for this, but we will all respect him for it. The aspect of Andy that may have surprised me the most is his attention to detail and preparedness. He seems to always be tinkering and finding ways to make his setup more efficient. I really admire his grit and determination. His fitness speaks for itself, but most of all, I'm thankful for his friendship. This bikepacking world is a funny one, filled with even funnier individuals, and at the outer edges are the extra unique ones. Andy is leading the parade of that fringe group within the fringe. He is one of the fiercest competitors, our most courageous adventurers, and our most eager cheerleaders. Thank you, Andy, for being you. There is no one that could do it better. Hugs and kisses, Nathan. So this was a really good chat, and I hope you enjoy it. And I'm not going to really go on that much more because I think I've said enough. And I want to just say that without further delay, I bring you Andy Ward.
I switched off Bluetooth and then I toggled the microphone off and on again on Instagram.
What could computers say?
I mean, I would have never figured that out. I just, if it was my mom, I'd be like, yeah, we're not talking today.
Yeah, fuck it. I can't see your face, so I can just see your mouth. You got great teeth. There you go.
Awesome. I wish.
I had troubles too, man. This mic, I couldn't use this mic anymore. This is my mic. I've been using this mic for fucking 5 years, right? It's a Shure. It's like a really good mic, but I don't know. I think there's a problem with the grounding because it's buzzing. So I've got this backup, this Behringer, but this is my mic. This is my, you know, it's my mic and it gives me really good low end, you know, and this one's not the same.
At least you got a few toys. You can make it work.
I know. And it's been a while since I've done one. Like, new job and fucking life. I haven't had the time.
How's the job going?
Good, man. Yeah. It isn't about me, though. But tell us. Yeah, communication, telecommunications. I mean, I have a background in it. But to get, not only to get back into it, but to learn the infrastructure of the area, right? Like, there's been dudes coming up from Cranbrook to train me. And they've just been on the job for a long time. So they kind of just know the infrastructure. They know where to find information. They know the online tools to use to do things. And like, technicians used to get like 3 months of training and I've gotten like 3 weeks. So fuck, dude. Yeah, it's been, yesterday was, yeah, anyway.
Challenging.
I'm just doing my best, right? And I don't know if it's an old guy thing, right? Like, maybe it's harder for me to learn because I'm a little older now. I don't know. But it's just been, it's been tough. Plus it's union, so there's all that side of thing. What do you do anyway? I don't even know what you do.
I work in a liquor store right now.
Oh, right. You probably make more money than I do, man.
I was a professional bartender for a long time, but then with family and stuff, the late nights were impossible.
Yeah.
So I started to work in a liquor store, and now I'm attempting to become a non-drinking, completely sober individual working around lots of alcohol. It's quite challenging.
Well, cycling has a drinking problem, as we've read in the past. Do you, okay, I'll get right into it. Did you struggle with alcohol? Like, did you, was that a thing for you, or?
Yeah, like, not like, yes, because I want to give up. And I've drunk a lot since I was young. Mm-hmm. But it's never, in my mind, become a problem for, you know, my function and my health and relationships with other people. Mm-hmm. But with every time I give up and I accidentally slip back, I find myself more frustrated and angry with alcohol than ever.
Hmm.
And I think every time you give up, the next time you notice the changes a bit more. Like, this time around, I felt I didn't drink for 7 months. Then I let myself slip, had about 3 months, and it was getting way too common. And then I gave up and I actually did feel mental clarity. I, you know, the sleep's always improved and you just focus on your goals and stuff better. So the first reason why I originally quit was because I was getting sick all the time. My son was bringing home every virus and I was picking it up.
Right.
And even just one or two beers at night, I thought that was potentially going to be affecting my immune system. So I gave up because of that. But there are other benefits, and now I just don't really want it as part of my life.
I had the same thing with, I don't know if it was a struggle, but I've talked about it on the podcast before with cannabis, right? And I was definitely using cannabis as a crutch in my previous life just to get through, I found. And I found that my use increased. And I quit near the end of my last relationship because I didn't think it was serving it. I didn't think it was serving me in showing up better for my family and my ex, now ex-wife. And I've since let it in a little bit, and it's a slippery slope. Like I haven't for a while, but when I was out on my own after I moved out of the house, you know, I let a little bit in, like, oh, maybe let's try it a bit. And once you've gone through the mental cleansing, right, and you've the fog is lifted, I found it was a lot easier to, especially if you're using intentionally. And when I say using, it sounds so dirty, but using alcohol or using cannabis or using whatever, once you're clear and you use again, you're a bit more mindful around the effects on your clarity, on your mood, on your, and so I let it in a bit and I was like, no.
Yeah. They're subtle and they're strong, but if you let yourself kind of slip, it's very easy to get into a habit again. And actually I love non-alcoholic beer, but I think the problem with them is they don't really help you break a habit. They keep a habit alive.
Yeah. It's almost like that, I was talking to a friend the other day. They were asking about focus and how they wish that, you know, there's like, maybe I should just like do a little line of cocaine because maybe it'll give me some focus to like be able to do this next task. And I was like, well, I don't think that's the best way to go. But it's like nicotine gum, right? Or something like that. I've used nicotine gum just once a long time. I was with someone who had ADD and they went, oh, do you want some gum? And I'm like, oh, sure. I love a piece of gum. Like, oh, it's nicotine gum. And it's like, never had it. Never smoked cigarettes. And I'm like, yeah, why not? I'll give it a go and see what it's like. And for not having any nicotine ever really in my system, super interesting drug. Like it definitely like focused me. Like it really focused things down. But I didn't feel the need to want to continue its use. Like I was like, oh, that was kind of interesting. I could feel the effects, but yeah, I'm good. I don't really need that. That being said, I don't talk about it a lot, but I'm a microdoser. I still microdose mushrooms from time to time when things get kind of weird. I find really small doses of psilocybin really handy for depression, anxiety, focus, all sorts of things. I don't know. I guess we all have a vice, and I drink, but I don't have a problem with it. And I think it's almost like every drug has its place.
Well, I think one of the problems with alcohol as well is once you give up, if you slip back, you maybe try and consume the level of which you used to.
Right. And the habit forming, right?
Yeah. And rather than, and you can't do that because you lose your
tolerance.
Resistance.
Yeah. Your tolerance. Oh, man. Yeah. So
now, if I have 3 glasses of wine at dinner, I'll have a 2-day hangover. Well, I just don't want that in my life. Like, time is too precious. Yeah. Family's too precious. Yeah. Time to go ride a bike's too precious.
Yeah. And it affects that side of things too. Do you wear some sort of a like sleep monitor? Like I was kind of a Whoop guy for a while. Do you have a Whoop?
Yeah, I've got a Garmin like Instinct, and it kind of keeps an eye on it. I'm not sure they're good for your health either.
Talk about that. Yeah.
Because you kind of are always monitoring yourself, and mm-hmm. maybe you'll, oh, I won't ride tonight. I won't do a hard session because in the morning I'll have a bad sleep score or this or that. And I won't eat late because I have a bad sleep score. So it's not necessarily good for your mental health
Mental
either.
health, yeah. I
But
agree, because you kind of you I remember, and I didn't. I mean, I wasn't training as hard as you were. I just thought it was fascinating data. I'm a bit of a data guy, and the Whoop. I thought it was interesting because you could, if you paid attention to it, you could watch the patterns. Like I'm sure you know, and I know because I again I don't drink often, but when I do, that thermic effect of alcohol in our body, it makes us so hot, right? And you go to sleep. And you have a shitty sleep because your body temperature won't come down because you're metabolizing this alcohol, and then slow. I always noticed that your sleep scores would take a shit after one beer, like not a tie one on kind of night, which is a totally different thing. But it's like even a couple beers and it'll knock you for the next 3 to 5 days, and the Whoop data kind of shows that. So I found that interesting, but it was so expensive. Like fuck, it was like $30 a month.
yeah, Garmin's good because you just have the ridiculous cost of the initial unit, but then
Right.
sort of just you can keep an eye on it. But yeah, I try not to look at it every day
Right.
because you it's not necessarily good for you.
No, it's that's a good call. And I think that it's like I remember when I was riding the Divide, and I had I don't think I had the climbing data. Like you know how it chirps at you? Hey, big climb coming up, right? I didn't have the yeah, you know what I mean. And I remember on the Divide, I'd be riding with these guys and hear this booty booty beep. And I'm like, ah, oh, fuck. So how long is this one? Oh, it's like 15 miles and it's average 6% and blah, blah, blah. It's like, I don't want to know that. I don't want to know any of that.
I do like knowing that,
I do now that I have it. It's kind of interesting, right?
but I don't know how to pace it properly. So I've sort of taken to pacing a little softer, and then I'll have lots of energies at the top. But if it's one of these short events, I'm getting overtaken because I'm pacing it so slow, and I don't have a power meter or anything. So it's I don't think if you don't have power meter data, but you do know the length of the climb, I don't know if it's helpful. Because you don't like, okay, it's a big climb. Are you going to take your time, or are you going to I don't know, take too much time?
Well, that's that PLE, right? That perceived level of of exertion, right? So
Yeah.
it's like you really like using climbing intuitively, right? Like you can look at the data and you see like the green, yellow, red, or whatever. I think that's what it is. And it's just like, okay, there's a bit of red coming up. So it's like while you're in the yellow, back it off a little bit. Right. And then just kind of grind out the red. And then, oh, here comes the yellow. It's like if you pay attention and then kind of pay attention to your perceived level of exertion, you can kind of like balance it out, I find, maybe. Again, I'm not super geeky with that stuff, but I just remember hating the hearing that chirp, like bit a bit. It's like, ah, oh, fuck, turn that off. I don't want to hear that. You have a 30-mile climb coming up.
It is funny though, because we have here in the Rockies, we have 300, 400, 5, maybe 700 meter climbs.
Yeah.
But these long 12 to 1500 meter climbs,
Yeah.
this is not something we have around here.
No. Yeah, punchy, super punchy around here, right? Yeah. So, I mean, we just kind of jumped right into the pool, right? I like it. So Andy, welcome to the podcast. It's about time, right? We had a chat. And I don't know you that well. I mean, we've interacted a couple times. Kind of out in the field. But I've never really been able to sit down and actually get to know you. So this is kind of cool to be able to do that. I detect an accent. Where are you from? What's your origin?
I'm originally from Scotland, south of
That's what
Glasgow.
I thought.
I've been in North America now for like 13, 14 years, I think. And I'm now a Canadian. Became a Canadian this year, got my citizenship. Pretty stoked by that.
Yeah, cool. How did
So,
that go? What's that process like?
the compared to residency, it's actually a lot easier. It's just paperwork and money. And then you do have to do, if you're, I think it's if you're under 52, you have to do a citizenship test, which we all dread. But when you start studying for it, it's really interesting and it's super, super easy.
Right.
So.
What's the most interesting thing you learned about Canada? Because I bet you know more about this country than I do, having studied that, I bet,
That's the
sadly.
thing. by living here, you're kind of a naturalized citizen anyway. You know the answers to all these questions. I wouldn't say there's anything in particular that most Canadians wouldn't actually know. I think the UK's citizenship test is probably far more challenging because the history's longer and deeper and more complicated. But yes, it's not particularly challenging. And I must say as well, the one thing that I was disappointed with is that the no in-person citizenship ceremonies anymore.
Oh, that's kind of a bummer. So they don't like greet you to Canada kind of thing.
Yeah, I thought that, but it was so well done virtually that I loved how in particular they highlighted the reparations and Indigenous cultures and that being a huge part of being a Canadian. And it just felt very powerful. So I still felt pretty special that day.
Right on. That's cool. Well, when was that? Just a couple of years ago, you said?
No, it was like 3 months ago.
Oh shit. Well, welcome to Canada. Welcome to Canada. Welcome to being a Canadian, eh? Right on. Fucking rights.
Allowed to stay.
And then what brought you to Canada in the first place? Like why Canada from Scotland?
Skiing and snowboarding, just like everyone, right?
Just like that.
Well, the first, my first time in Canada, I lived in Whistler.
Oh, you did,
Did
eh?
a big season in Whistler, and then went down to Vancouver for a crazy summer, and then work and holiday visa disappeared, so I had to leave. But I had a good vibe from Canada, so I wanted to go
Yeah,
back,
man.
explore a little bit more, and then while traveling, met my wife. And for a number of years, we tried to figure out how to get back to Canada, but we had to like live in Ireland and plot and travel and scheme. Finally, we got back and we were headed back to Whistler. And you'll know this better than anyone. She got offered a job with Solomon doing like marketing communication, and they offered like $45,000 a year. And for Whistler, that's just, you can't live on
You
that.
can't live anywhere in Canada for 45 grand a year. Are you
Well,
kidding me?
this was 9 years ago, but
Yeah,
like
fair.
to ask someone to live in Whistler for that kind of salary is just madness.
Pretty crazy. Unless the benefits are awesome. Like, free, she probably would get free shit. Would she get a free pass? Stuff like, don't know.
I didn't really ask. She told me this, and I was like, I don't think it's worth going because I think I had a really good bartending job there,
Which
and
bar did you
making,
work at?
did you know the Barefoot Bistro?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was working there, and so I
Nice.
was making pretty good bank, and I still made zero money. I stayed static the entire time I was there, and shared a bedroom for $700 a month. Again, nine years ago, it's like, or longer, yeah.
When was I there? I moved there in what, like early 90s? Like, I want to say I did a snowboard camp in like 89, 90, and then moved back 90, 91, maybe. And so yeah, same thing. I shared a studio. They called the Chicken Coops down Creekside. They're not there anymore. They tore them down. It was like Creekside. Like as you're coming up from Vancouver, they would have been, there's that gas station on the left, and it would
Yeah,
have been kind of a strip of condos on the left there.
I used to live across from Roland's, so.
Oh, okay. That's a good place to live. I think the creek is where that's the place to be. But we were paying, like in early 90s, I think we were paying about $1,500, and it was a studio. So the four of us lived in this place and had a loft. And I slept on the floor. There was a double bed. Two buddies slept in the double bed together. And this other guy, friends of those guys, a friend of those guys, went and like toured around Creekside and found lumber, and he built like a bunk bed over top of that bed. It was just like I couldn't fucking believe it. Like it was fun at the time because I would have been what, 20, 20, 21. So it is what it is, right? But after a while that gets fucking tiring. Like, yeah, dealing with people.
Very reminiscent of many stories I had of friends while we were living there.
Yeah, it's just the way it is. And I remember Staffacom, I think it was at Brio. Is that right? Like down towards the village on the right as you're coming from Creekside. I think it was on the right. Oh, no, not Brio. Anyway, there's Staffacom there, and I remember getting into Staffacom, and it was amazing because it was about the same amount of money, but I shared a bedroom, a big bedroom, with another guy, and that was fun. And they had a big, you know, they had a lounge. We watched Star Trek: The Next Generation. Like, yeah, I've got really good memories. But then beyond that, the first house I bought there with my first wife was like, I think it was 350, 350 grand. It was like down Tapley's Farm, down the bottom of the hill by the golf course towards Alta Lake. We sold that. People bought it for like, we sold it for like five. They tore it down and they built like a $2 million house on it. And now the thing's probably worth $10 million. Like,
Yeah.
easy. Yeah.
I will say as well, Whistler was probably was my second run in a mountain town with like seasonal affective disorder and how tough these mountain towns are. And not for me this time. But I had a friend, he fractured his foot sort of the first 2 weeks of the season
Yeah.
and then was on the, you know, in his bed playing World of Warcraft for like the next 5 months, and his mental well-being was just in tatters. He could barely even seem to brush his teeth on a day, you know.
Wow.
And it happens all the time, you know. These towns can kick your ass even though they're playgrounds.
Yeah, but the playgrounds, it's financially hard. And a lot of people, I think, you know, I did. I didn't go to any college or university. I just moved straight to Whistler. So it's like I had no living on my own experience, right? So they call it University of Whistler. It's like, oh, what school did you go to? University of Whistler. I moved there and like lived there, worked there, kind of progressed there, got married there, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but it's like I don't really have a lot of formal education. That was just maybe I was just a snowboard bum, right? I just went and just, I don't know. I didn't know what to do with my life, kind of thing.
I still don't.
No, I know. I don't either. It is, as my girlfriend says, that's it, Steve. Time's up, buddy. Like, you've got to take this job that you just have and you need to stay there. You need to stay there, try to develop some sort of pension. And, like, because, yeah, I'm 53. Another 10 years, I'm going to be 63. And hopefully my kids will move the fuck out of here and I can, you know, just.
My son has promised he's never leaving home.
Oh, he's promised that, hey? Oh. I said to my
With the
daughter,
cost, yeah, with
what's.
the cost of living, though, you can kind of believe it,
Yeah,
right?
I guess. Well, I live in a tiny two-bedroom apartment. So I've told them it's like, I can't afford to get anything more than this. I've got two kids, right? And, you know, they're at the age where they probably shouldn't be sharing a bedroom. But I'm like, well, you know what? This is what I've got. And I'm not going to drop 2 grand a month for an extra bedroom. I can't. I won't. I won't do it. So I just, it's just not, it's just getting, like you said, 45 grand in Whistler. It's like that can, in this little town, you know, you can barely get by on that. I think the living wage here is pushing $30 an hour, right? I don't know what it, you're in Cranbrook, right?
Oh, Fernie.
Oh, Fernie. I thought you were in Cranbrook for some reason. Fernie's expensive too, right? Like it's, that would
Yeah.
be my, if I could move from here, I'd probably want to move to Fernie. I don't know what I would do there though. I mean, the Telus is there as well, but
Yeah, it's a good place. We got a trailer when things were not crazy, and you know, so we don't have any scary mortgage or anything. Live in a
good.
trailer park town. It's so fortunate. And it really allows me to do everything on the bike. Like, that's why it seems like I might have dentist bikes and, you know, premium this and that is just because everything lined up for me and I'm able to live a pretty cheap life at home.
Well, you're not mortgage poor, right? Which I think is pretty common, you know.
If I had that, I'd have nothing. Like, we still kind of don't save that much, but it's mostly because of my bike habit.
Bike habit. That's another problem. That's like alcohol. Now we get into the bike problem. So you lived in Whistler for a bit, and then was Fernie your next step? Was that just like another ski town hop? Like, hey, let's go somewhere else. Let's go to Fernie.
No, I lived in Van after that and then had to leave. So I lived in Central America, Nicaragua, while Costa Rica, and then Ireland, and yeah, just kind of I was traveled for about 7 years before I kind of got to Fernie, And for any, we always wanted to come here. I originally wanted to do my first season in Whistler here, in Canada here, but just harder to get to. So just kind of got to Whistler and just, yeah, stayed,
It's
got lucky.
easy, right? It's close to the airport, it's close to Vancouver.
Longer season as well,
And the
by
season's longer,
the way.
And then when did the like Fernie, obviously you probably got just, oh, did you bike in Whistler? Do you do any mountain biking there?
Nope, I was always kind of a foot soldier, hiking and running as my summer sport. But my wife introduced me to mountain biking while we were traveling. I think the first place I rode a bike was in San Gil in Colombia, and it was amazing. Absolutely loved it. And then we did, yeah, when we moved to Canada, I got my France's my wife's name's France. Her uncle was selling a hardtail, so I picked that up, a 2002 Kona Fire Mountain.
Nice.
And we moved out to Fernie here with hardtails. And then that first summer, I met a guy from a bike shop, and he sort of took me under his wing. Duncan Ellis, and he took me to ridiculous trails that I had no right to be on that bike on. I folded the handlebars one day.
Oh, did
They
you?
just, yeah, and you know, the by the end of that day, someone else had given me another set of handlebars and made the bike stronger and just kept going. The triple chain set and stuff. I love that bike. I would wear a snowboard helmet. Because I had no, and it was great, but it really got me into the riding, and that actually led me to get a Trek Slash. But I think that's because I didn't really understand what enduro riding was. I thought enduro meant endurance, because I was really into climbing and descending and
Well,
like loop, yeah,
kind
doing
of.
loop trails, and I think it was. It was probably the next year that I was like, oh, I'm a cross country rider. But I had this big bike by then, so just kept riding it because it was still fun. Super fun bike.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I remember, I started mountain biking in Whistler, and I remember riding shit, no helmet. This was early 90s, right? So, no helmet, fully rigid, And my claim to fame is I'm pretty sure I was the first guy to get the first gen Manitou, the gray one, the elastomer one.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I used to get the looks, right? Whoa, look at that bike. It was like a Kona Explosive with Manitous and Scott 83 bars, like those the bars that curve around forward kind of thing. And then that bike got stolen and ended up with Mag 21s, like first gen Mag 21s. And it was just like there's noodles compared to shit now, like just the flex, like
Yeah.
just, but it completely changed, the way you could ride stuff. I mean, I ride hardtails now. I thought about getting a full squish bike this year, but I bought a Trooper instead. I bought a 89 Trooper with my money instead of a bike. I've got enough bikes. My bikes do what I need it to do. But yeah, it's funny how you tend to over bike, right? Like you almost buy the bike that's like, yeah, because I rode some fully squished bikes like Mullet 24, 26, and you just cross country on it and they're so heavy, right? It just makes you a stronger rider.
I still think hardtails are the best. I have
I
a full
do
suspension
too.
bike, but if I'm riding, like going trail riding, I just take a 120 mil hardtail and absolutely love it. With those big knobby tires and stuff, I don't have suspension, but suspension is nice for a little bit more technical riding, for traction, or yeah, it has its place.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, even flat pedals, right? Like I've been riding flat pedals for a while. It's kind of what you get used to, but I kind of always felt like riding hardtail bikes makes you a little bit better of a rider. It makes you can feel the terrain better. Like you might not be able to go as fast, like,
I wish more people like use them for introduction still. Like, they seem to have just died when it comes to being the first bike. I'd still recommend it to people, but then they can't sell them on. And everyone just thinks full suspension, yeah. But it's a long time before you progress and even need it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's either that or now it's E.
Which is great. Gets more people on bikes.
You're right. I'm not going to go on a big rant about e-bikes. I won't do it. I think people should earn their turns, right? It's like ride a bike without a motor in it. Learn how to ride a mountain bike without a motor in it. And then, yeah, you know,
to go straight to them is a bit crazy, but I love the guys that like, you know, they've only got 2 hours. They're going for a 2 hour ride, yeah. And instead they're doing 3 laps of one trail instead of doing that trail once. Yeah. They've used the same amount of energy. They've used the same amount of calories. If anything, it's been harder on the downhills because they've got to throw that lump around.
Yeah.
And they have their place. They are eroding trails quicker. Mm. It's probably the only major negative to them.
Yeah. That's something I've noticed. Like, so I lived in Pemberton for a while, and it was kind of like on the dawn of shuttling, right? When people were shuttling stuff, bikes were getting big, shuttling became, you know, no one wanted to climb, everyone was shuttling. And I could see when I lived in Pemberton, I could see the trails changing. I could see them changing because not only were the bikes getting bigger and people able to ride faster, but because they're riding faster, they're cutting corners. They were like, you know, railing and like rooping and skidding and sliding. And then they would do that 4 times a day. And the trails, because they're shuttling it, right? Where I'd leave my house, I'd ride 10K to the trail, I'd do a massive climb, I would do the same trail, and then I would ride home. So I would do like a 40K ride, and I'd ride that thing once, where they're doing like 20K ride, shuttling it, and riding it like 4 or 5 times. And the trails were just getting wrecked. And I'm seeing that a little bit with, and I'm not pointing my fingers at e-bikes, but same kind of concept. People can ride super fast. They can go and do multiple loops of these trails, and they're so burly, and people don't have the bike handling skills. So they're, you know, old school trails to me are, they're the best because you can't just open it up and fly. You've got to like pick and squeeze through trees and da, 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 da. But I'm just finding that there's a lot more people cutting corners now, like cutting switchbacks and stuff like that. Maybe let's call it an evolution, the evolution of trails, right? But at the same time, it's causing erosion, it's causing the trails to break down, increased maintenance. And then not to mention, to me, again, I said I wasn't going to go on a bit of a rant, but now I am. just the environmental side of it all, right? It's like, you know, a steel hardtail bike, you know, when that gets done or gets bent or it breaks, you could literally bury that in the ground and it'll turn into dirt, right? You take this carbon frame and you crack it and it's done. You can't really repair it. You can, but you can't really. And that's around forever. That's basically aerospace materials. It's not going away. It's basically made of plastic for lack of, and glue and resin and all these things. And then throw a battery in it and a motor. And now you've got all the extra materials for that, all the extra elements that are mined using machines that burn diesel to like dig all this shit out of the ground to make batteries to, so it's just like, I don't know, man. I think I'm a Puritan, really. Maybe I'm just an old guy Puritan. Just give me a free, yeah.
We send you on a spiral there.
Yeah, right. So it just kind of makes me think of that. It just makes me think of, or you know, all the memes you're seeing of this Tesla Cybertruck, these $120,000 trucks that are basically just Tonka toys, and they're just falling apart. They're made of plastic and shitty aluminum, and they can't even tow a trailer without the bumper flying off. Like all this stuff we're seeing, right? It's just consumerism, right? Just consumerism. Everyone just wants the best and the, I don't know, man. I don't know. Just drive a car. I was driving around my 89 Trooper today. It's the best fucking little truck to drive around. Love it.
Don't even drive a car, Steve.
True, so, you know? You're right. You're right. And you know, now my commute is like literally, I could probably hit my office with a rock from here. So I barely ever drive. I had to drive my Trooper today because the battery is getting low because it hasn't been charged. So I rip around, do some off-roading in it and some Christmas shopping. But yeah, you're right. You're right. I should just get rid of my car. But yeah, I gotta get around. I live in the middle of nowhere, right? I gotta get places, right?
Yeah, I live in the middle of nowhere, but my wife is, we have a Dodge Grand Caravan and she saves me when I need her. So.
I have one of those too. I have two ve I'm a two vehicle guy, and the reason I bought the Trooper is I got so sick of driving around this soccer mom van.
I love it.
It, you know what? It's a great vehicle. It is a great vehicle. Like, it
Especially,
really is.
you could throw a whole fat bike in the
Sure
back
can. Don't you
without with a child, and you know, it's like.
No, you're right. It does. It holds so much shit, you know, paddleboards and all sorts of crap and bikes and kids and
It's our second one. The first one we used to go and collect lumber with it, like for the
I thought about if I had a little bit more money, it's like, gosh, I wonder if I can get this thing lifted. Put 33s on it and lift it up and
Honestly, if they could just have higher clearance, they'd be the ultimate backcountry
would
vehicle,
be
and I'm sure
great.
vehicles like that.
It's funny, I was driving around in the truck. It's only a two-seater because it's all camperized, right? So I kind of alternate my kids and I take them for little rips in the go-kart. And we went down to a parking lot. I was doing donuts, right? Because it's rear-wheel drive, so I was doing donuts and like when it's not in four by. And then we're driving around in the caravan, and I took them tobogganing. And there's this big parking lot, and my daughter was like, "Can you do donuts in this thing?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you just have to do them backwards." So we all got into the car with their toboggans, and I just put it in reverse. It did like three big don't like reverse donuts in the parking lot. Front wheel drive, yeah, gotta do it in reverse. Yeah, they are a great car. They're a fun car, and it's reliable. I shouldn't complain, but it's I just w wish it was a bit cooler, which is why I bought the truck, right?
I think are cool.
They are cool. Yeah, I've heard someone, there was a dude I used to work when I worked at this last place, and he had a white one, and I'd pull up in my black one, and we'd pull up beside each other in the parking lot. We'd roll down windows. He'd be like, "Nice van." But apparently they're like the like molestation vans now. It's not those bl blue panel vans anymore with no windows. It's like the caravans that are kind of deemed the puppies and candy vans. You know what I mean? Anyway,
Yeah.
I got to get rid of that thing. So mountain biking, so you obviously the riding in Fernie is awesome. I rode there a little bit this summer. I love it.
You know, the thing is, it's not just a single track. And the Ages Gravel Series is sort of clung on to how good the gravel is around here. And, you know, it's not always big, nasty, cootie chonk. There
Yeah.
are some amazing gravel roads. And yeah, we're just super fortunate. And we're so connected to all the backcountry. You can get to Invermere from here. And
Totally.
I have. One of my last adventures ended up at Lakeside Bikes, getting fixed up there. What a cracking shop. But yeah, we're all connected. It's amazing.
Yeah, Lakeside's a great show. I was just there today. I say that about Invermere too. It's like, you know, I could leave here, ride 2 kilometers of pavement, get on a dirt road, and I could ride to I could ride to Cranbrook, Kimberley, I could hop on the Epic, I could ride to, you can do it. You can just get there or go on the other side and ride up over, like do the old Lost Elephant route, like up over Wild Horse Pass and down into Fort Steele. Like you can just do it, right? Get up and over the Rockies into like Kootenay FSR and get to Canal Flats or yeah.
So many amazing routes, and I'm still like searching and finding crazy things. And that's actually my favorite kind of riding now, is just exploring and seeing if there's. I've got this book called Biking in the Rockies, by Doug Eastcott, I think. Second edition was 1999, and I essentially was working on a project to see if like all of these routes still go. And some of the ones we've been to have been absolutely incredible, and just not known about anymore. So it's pretty cool.
I think that it's not an issue, it just is what it is. But Kananaskis is like right there, right? It's literally just over there. Like as a crow flies, it might be what, 40K, right? Straight through the Rockies, but you can't go through there because it's all park. Do you know a way to get from Invermere to like Elk Pass other than going all the way down to Elkford and up, or the Fort Trunk Road 40 and up?
I wouldn't know about that area.
Yeah.
That's My specialty's sort of flathead.
Yeah, you spent a lot of time down there for sure. And then, so when did the endurance thing kind of come to light for you?
Well, actually, so speaking of ages, during the COVID, Anything Goes Gravel Series was once for any gravel grind, and they had to cancel their very first gravel event. And instead, they did five challenges of different distances. And one of them went over Hartley right next to my house. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I'm going to do that. And so I did my first 100K ride doing like the Bull River and then coming back through Galloway and, up Kikado, R River Road to Kikado, that kind of area. And I was like, my fueling was terrible. My bike literally shook itself apart. I had a multi-tool that literally disassembled in my frame bag. And I came back from it and was just like, well, I got a lot to figure out, but that was amazing.
Yeah, and then so how did you feel after 100K?
Oh,
It's kind of a big deal, you know, like your first
I
100K
felt
ride.
horrific.
Yeah,
I
right?
felt absolutely terrible. I ate a few Clif bars and ate like some sandwiches. I ha was not fueled. I was just a puddle. I was hooked.
Yeah.
So I did the rest of those challenges and I took a lot more food and started getting into different electrolytes and stuff so that I wouldn't fall apart. And rather than having a 30 tooth chain ring, went a little bigger because, you end up spinning on the flats on these gravel routes, still just on like a hardtail. And yeah, just was in love with it. And I think I did a 350 kilometer week during that summer. And I remember that winter saying to a friend of mine, I was like, oh, I don't know if I'll ever do that again. It's a
You
lot of
just
time
did that
away.
last week, didn't you?
Yeah.
In
Yeah.
the
A lot of time away
winter,
from,
no less.
yeah. A lot of time away from the family. And I was like, oh, I don't know how the wife's going to feel about that. And then it's like, oh, and that's become at least a bi-weekly thing during the summer, if not more.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, it's great that you have the time to do that. I mean, I was going to ask, like, where do you find, I mean, obviously, for me, for my experience with it was I might have took liberties with the long rides, having a family. Like I think it might have actually been one of the reasons the collapse of my marriage was how I just felt so driven and motivated to go out all the time. But maybe I was being selfish, maybe for me, and this is me. But how do you find the balance with how many kids do you have?
Just one,
One just.
8-year-old.
One and done.
Oh, very much so.
I was gonna say, yeah, one and done. I love my kids. Two is like, is like, what's the word? It's not just twice as hard. It's like 10 times as hard with two, I think, especially when you're a single dad. Well, single, half-time dad. Where do you find the? How do you find the time to get out and do that stuff?
Well, I mean, maybe I am taking selfish liberties.
And I wasn't, please don't
No,
misunderstand.
no.
Yeah, okay.
And that is just something you have to understand. But my wife is incredibly supportive. She knows how important it's become for my mental health. I only work 4 days a week. And a lot of it built up through while I was a stay-at-home dad. So I'd be with my son from 6 a.m. till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And then I just take off for a 5-hour ride in the evening because
Yeah.
that was what he did. I mean, especially when kids are young, it's not a very stimulating environment.
Good
You
for
know
you.
what I
You
mean.
know what, the dude? Like, good for you. Good for you for doing that. Because I think, quote, being a stay-at-home mom or a stay-at-home parent while the other parent works is like that person's working their ass off, you know, to raise a child and I had a buddy who was a stay-at-home dad for a while too, and I know that at the end of the days he had two kids, he was done. Like he was completely done with these, just he needed the escape, he needed to get out. And then, and moms need that too. People need that, right? People need that outlet to get away from it. So I just imagine her coming home and you're just like high fiving her. Psh, see you in 5 hours.
Yeah, I try to kind of have dinner and calm and you know, make my escape calmly.
Right.
But you know, at that time he was going to bed 7 o'clock, so there wasn't a huge amount of time where she would be responsible for him. And she could wind down as well. It's got harder as he's got older. You think you're going to have more time when they go to school. You think you're going to have more time, but their bedtimes get later. And my son is a little neurodivergent, so he's pretty intense. So he needs a lot of one-to-one. He needs to be occupied, I think is the best way to put it. So the time disappears, but my wife is very kind to give me a lot of time to get out. But, you know, that's why I think getting out and going bike packing, or getting out and doing a crazy ride on Global Fat Bike Day, these are actually almost easier than going to an event. Because an event is a date, a time and a date that has to line up with how your family's feeling, how everyone's sort of mental health is, how everyone's a little, you know, not burned out at work and feeling good about being around one another. And the last Lost Elephant, I had multiple times on the ride where I just ended up crying. So I was just worried about what I'd left my wife, because she's, you know, challenged by work. Family life was a little bit tough. And I'm just like, I felt bad for leaving her. And I probably wouldn't have if it wasn't an event. So, I mean, you know, when you're in these events, your emotions just well up to the surface and you end up just randomly crying or shouting at a mountain. It's wonderful. But that's why I love bike packing. It's so great when you can just get out, the weather's good, you've got a weekend free, Everyone seems like they're in a good place. That's when you need to go out and go bike packing. Events are amazing for community and for challenging yourself, but they do tend to be a little bit more strenuous on relationships.
Yeah, I hear that. And it's funny how, so when I rode the Divide, you know, my relationship was probably kind of falling apart at that point. And I finished it. It took me a little longer than I thought. And Bonnie Gagnon, who we all know, she said to me once, she said, you need to ride it again, because without having all the weight you were carrying of the collapse of your relationship, you probably would be in a way better place. So it can't be. I'm lost for words today. It can't be underestimated just how much a little bit of weight can affect your performance in an event, like you carrying the care and the concern of your family and your wife. It weighs you down. It's like carrying extra shit on your bike. It weighs you down.
Yeah, I mean, I used to go out for bike rides to solve my grumpiness or problems I'd have during the day. I don't really do that anymore. I don't find it as helpful as it used to be. I've just changed my relationship with the bike. It's almost better to stick around, confront your problems, or find something productive to do that might help that other person. I don't know. The Divide is, I'd love to do it, but it's so big, it's so long, it's going to test relationships. And yeah, I can understand if you were already sort of in a deficit, then that could be quite dangerous.
Yeah, despite even giving her first right of refusal a number of times, I was like, just tell me, just I won't go, and I won't be mad about it. You tell me if you don't want me to go and I won't go. But I mean, when I reflect back, I think she wanted me to go at that point. She just wanted to not be around me, probably. That's kind of where our relationship was at. I was just talking about it today, actually. I have this video on my phone of me sitting in New Mexico on a stump. New Mexico, I talk about the Divide a lot. I hope people don't get bored with it. But the New Mexico is fucking hard. Like, you know, you're you're near the end and you're so done. You're just so done, right? You just want it to be over. And I took a video of me sitting on a log eating some shitty old pizza out of my frame bag. And I was just, you know, reflecting and talking into space. And the one thing that I said was, I'm going to know the state of my relationship when I get back, and I'll know by the hug that I receive from my partner where we're at. And it was like, dude, I probably hugged you more warmly when I met you the first time than the hug I got from my ex. Like, I just knew instantly. I'm like, okay, that's it. I think this is it. Right. I just knew it wasn't, she wasn't happy to see me. She wasn't, it was so indifferent. Right. And it fucking broke my heart a little bit. You know, it just really, really, really set in that. And you know, sometimes I reflect, I mean, maybe I was escaping, maybe, but I don't know. I'm a passionate guy. I've always ridden bikes. Like, since I was a kid, always been a rider. It will always be a staple in my life. It will never not be something that I do and enjoy. Right. And sometimes I think maybe that my partner wanted me to change and maybe make that less of a priority. But like you said, it adds so much to our mental health. You got to go out and get your wiggles out. Like I say, right. You have to go out and get your wiggles out. But at the same time, it shouldn't, like you just mentioned, it shouldn't be an escape. You know, like I talked to a guy just, he posted a thread. He said, oh, I have a problem. You know, I buy a lot of bikes and ride bikes all the time, but you know, it helps my mental health. And he was like really diving deep and focusing on these material objects as an escape from his mental health issues. And I pushed back and I said, maybe it's time you need to confront or dig into where these mental health issues are coming from, because we all like to escape on the bike. And sometimes going out on the bike doesn't help me at all. I might feel shitty. I might go for a ride. And sometimes I'm just still in the shits the whole ride around, waiting for the release. Right. And sometimes it doesn't happen. Well, that means that I need to dive deeper into me. Right. And figure out where it's all coming from. Right.
I got to say as well, I think mountain biking and trail riding, it's really good if you want to not think about something.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Whereas I think the roadies have kind of got it when it comes to, you just go and do a long gravel or road ride. Gravel's better because then you don't have the stress of traffic.
Right.
The mental clarity I get from like doing an 8-hour easy gravel ride to like the beach at Newgate and back again, it's so much better for me than just going to do, you know, an hour of single track. They really put you in a very different mental place. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have a negative opinion about gravel riding, or if you have a negative opinion about mountain biking, realize that they can be different tools in how you might approach your mental health and trying to find resolution with something. But obviously, like I'm saying, I'm not going on those rides if I feel there's something I can't confront at home.
Yeah.
That makes
sense. No, it totally makes sense. It totally makes sense. We're kind of saying the same thing, except I'm just way too verbose. But it's just kind of like, yeah, you need to confront, you know, it's great to get out and do these things, but you can't use that as an escape from, it's like having a drink, right? Or 10 drinks. It's like, oh, or, you know, me, like, overusing cannabis as an escape from whatever you're feeling at the moment, rather than just confronting, having the difficult conversation with
somebody. Right.
What's that?
It's like a momentary band-aid, whether it's a bike ride or a drink or a smoke. It's just, yeah, you're putting it off.
Yeah. And you come out of the fog or whatever that you're in, and then you realize like, ah, oh, problem hasn't gone away. We hear this all the time. Right. But like that idea of just escaping, using whether it be sports or a compound to escape into, so we don't have to think about reality. And until you just confront these things in our life. So no, we're saying the same thing. And I think it's true, because what you were saying about the first lost, or the lost elephant you did, and you're carrying the weight, it's like, and you care, oh, maybe I shouldn't have gone. Maybe I should have stayed and been more supportive. And I'm not saying you weren't, please. This is just me, you know, it's like, you know, maybe I should have stayed and been more supportive and, you know, yeah, just been more supportive. Right.
I gotta say as well, I mean, that route was so tough. Anything in your mind that gave you even a millimeter of the scratch monster coming out, it was gonna get you, because that was absolutely brutal. It was super fun. It was an incredible experience. But I think that is a whole new level of mental clarity to get through something like that, or mental strength. Because it was a tough one.
I always like to credit the Lost Elephant races for setting, like, if you're thinking of doing something bigger, longer, I think it's those events just set you up for success moving forward because they are so difficult. The Divide wasn't, it was hard, but it wasn't Lost Elephant hard. It wasn't. You're not like bushwhacking, and I mean, yeah, we walked over passes for I equated like 16 hours of pushing your bike through the snow. Right, but you're not like those Lost Elephant races. Things are just like we talked about earlier, so punchy here and so gnarly and so rugged that it just sets you up for success. Like when you go and ride, like I talk about the BC Epic all the time. It's an awesome event because it's, I mean, really, it's pretty easy. Like there's not really a lot of hard shit in that. You know, there's that bit of single track between Trail and Castlegar, but
Oh.
yeah, which is gross. Like the first time I rode the Epic, it's so different a couple of years later. Like you could ride a lot of it a few years back, and then now it's like just beach sand and rocks and weird flow and
I need some trail advocacy. Anyone living in Castlegar and
yeah.
Nelson, get out there.
Yeah. So yeah, I just remember last time I did that. Well, I did it twice, right? On the yo-yo, and it was fucking hard. It was coming up. I'm like, ugh. It's gonna suck. It's gonna suck. Yeah.
I gotta say, having attempted the yo-yo and then got out there, I don't know if I want to do it now. I like the BC Epic is a really fun route when you're in, groups or like having a chase or having a fight. But I don't think it's my style of riding those long rail
Oh
grades
my
to then
God.
have downhill to have push and pedal downhill.
Yep.
Yeah, Swain's performance this year was insane.
Yeah.
Watching those dots was insane.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I want to do a 2000K ride. It's the perfect 2000K ride from
Yeah.
Fernie. But yeah, the yo-yos, it's a tough thing because you're gonna know what's coming up. You're gonna be have your mind reminded of what you're gonna be facing on the return.
I don't know. I didn't feel that way about it. I think the thing that sucked for me or that was hard was just the heat, like the heat, man. And for people to knock that off in a week or less, it's like fuck. I have so much admiration for that for those people, right? For me, it was the heat, but I kind of like going back because I rode through the night quite a bit, so I ended up riding sections during the day that I would have rode through the night, so I was able to see. And the sight lines are a bit different, and you know, but yeah, by the time I got to Fernie, I was so like, what's it called? Edema. I was so swollen, fuck, and I was shredded. My crotch was shredded, and I was so dirty, and holy shit, it was so tough. I was glad it was over, but
I mean, I couldn't even walk outside during that week. I would go outside for like 5 minutes and be like, no, I can't do
I don't
this.
want to be
Like,
outside.
so hot.
Oh,
Like
yeah.
that was offensive. And then, to see how what Megan managed to
Oh, my
do in that
God. Yeah.
heat is just like, whoa,
Yeah.
like absolutely. In fact, her performance at the Epic, along with Jay Peterberry's doing the classic.
Yeah.
Those were like the first things I ever noticed in bikepacking that made me go, "Oh, that's a cool way of riding bikes. I kind of want to do that."
Yeah.
But to think of her in particular, the heat, and just even finishing that route in under 3 days in that heat,
Yeah.
just astronomical.
Yeah.
So yeah,
Megan's an
so.
incredible athlete. Like watching her, like when I talked to her very early on in the podcast, and I just recall her saying, like, oh, you know, I'm not very good. off-road. I don't have a lot of off-road experience. I'm more of a roadie and blah, blah, blah. And now that she goes and she just like rips the divide a new one, right? Like just, she's been just such a joy to watch and such an impressive athlete, and just her professionalism and her, just her attitude. And she's always smiling, she always has a smile on her, and she just loves what she does, right?
Yeah, she's amazing. I got to know her a little bit better and not just as kind of a podcast character.
Yeah, for sure.
And she's just ever more inspiring.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty exciting to dot watch her on the Nelson Trees Triple Crown this year.
Yeah, for
So
sure.
I'm stoked for her.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
So we talked about the mental health kind of motivation. What else motivates you to get out and challenge yourself in these things?
I love the concept of exploring, and just seeing what's in your backyard, like the views, the places I've been, just near Fernie. It's absolutely amazing, and all by the power of the bicycle, human power travel, moving through nature. It's just incredible. It's just a really good time. Yeah.
You want to
I
talk?
don't really.
No, go.
Nope, go for it.
Oh,
I'm
I was
not
just
even.
going to ask you,
Oh,
what do you think about Cold Ride?
I'm stoked for that.
Yeah.
Me and Nathan and Eric had an absolute blast. Darren was there as well at Activa Epica this year. Like, and you know what? The ride was good. It wasn't the most crazy, challenging, but the community. The event, it was so much fun, and I think that that is going to be fostered incredibly well in this event. We're going to have tastes of the Lost Elephant, tastes of Activa Epica, and it's going to be tough though. I think if that route is soft or if it's 10 centimeter plus, I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be a seriously challenging experience for anyone. And but I can only encourage people to try, get out there and test your gear, and yeah, it could be one of the most incredible things you've ever done. It's going to be a good time.
Winter ultras scare me a bit, a little bit, and I think it comes from, I mean, I ride fat bikes all the time. I'm not adverse to the cold weather. I think I just learned a lot last year riding that 24-hour thing. I just could not stay dry. I couldn't stay dry, and I had to stop every lap to dry out, because otherwise I would have froze my ass. Like I would have gone hypothermic.
So I think that that is interesting, but having a climb, specifically constantly climbing on a fat bike, I think it can cause a lot of moisture issues. This route doesn't really have much aggressive climbing. It's just, from what I've seen, it's long, and like, potentially like soft snow could be more of the issue. I don't think it's really going to make you sweat super hard, but yeah, single track and climbing is where you're gonna have the most moisture problems for a long way. So I think you kind of like dove into the toughest challenge. If you did a circuit that's fairly flat for 24 hours, you'd probably have no moisture management issues whatsoever.
Yeah, I found it really, that's a good point, because that little route that I did, I was just lapping that thing, right? The coming back was, I would say 75% of it was like you're climbing, like rail grade kind of climb most of the way back, because going out Radium Way, other than the two big or two or three big climbs at the end were tough, but then going the other way, it was just this constant kind of upward trajectory of 3-4% kind of thing. So yeah, maybe you're right. I don't know. I just was so wet all the time and cold, and ugh, yeah, it's, I couldn't manage it. Couldn't manage it. And if I underdressed, I'd freeze my ass off. So I was trying to find that, like that good
Yeah.
combo.
I mean, sometimes it's, oh, I'm half zipped on my pits. It's I'm a
Yeah.
quarter zip here, and I don't particularly wear many layers, but it's that big jacket is always just zipping and unzipping, and it's taken a while for me to kind of find the things, but I'm still soaked. Like I use synthetic base layers, and they're usually pretty damp, but I managed to keep the warmth in, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting that you'd mention. So, like, I use merino next to skin stuff, but it doesn't seem to matter. And what I found is all it's almost a combo is a really a good thing. Like, a combo of naturals and synthetics seem to do. Like, the synthetics will, despite maybe a wool getting wet out a little bit, the synthetic will help it dry out faster with a heatier body and the synthetic. I don't know if that's true. But it's like, so you prefer synthetic layers over natural?
I've just always found the synthetics work slightly better for me. I've just been a bit sensitive to wool, even though merino is not the same. I just find that even a good merino, I'll just not quite feel right. Feels a little itchy, and they just don't dry and have the same. Yeah, they just don't seem to dry with your body heat the same way.
Yeah.
And I find once they get wet, they can just really cling to you. But everyone is different, and
Totally.
that's why you have to test your own gear. And I got this one long sleeve that I did in that video, and my mum bought that for me about 15 years ago, and it's so long, like it goes right down over my bum, and it's probably like a $10 garment, but it just works, and I can't replace it. And some things you just find that just work.
Fuck, I have something like that too. I still have it. I'm trying to think of it. I think it was a snowboard, an insulated snowboard top. Fuck, I can't even read the label of it anymore because it's so worn out. And it's got a hole in the back, like just through the one layer where your backpack would rub, has a little hole in the back, not all the way through. But it's like literally, when I lived in Whistler, so I probably would have got that in. It's got to be 25 years old, and it's like a staple piece. I wear it all the time, and sometimes I'll wear like a synthetic or a merino and just that, and that'll take me down to maybe, I don't know, minus 10 in that thing. And it's funny how you find this one garment, right? Like, that just, man, what am I going to do to replace this? Like, I can't replace this. It's the perfect piece because I wear it constantly, and then maybe layer off and on. I've got a waffle fleece, like a black diamond waffle fleece with a hood that I kind of, that green one, it's in all my pictures. I just wear that all the time, like the gray underneath. I even took that on the Divide. It was like the perfect piece for like early mornings. That it's whole, it stinks, right? It barely comes clean. It's just plastic, right? It's just this polyester, whatever. But yeah, it's funny, those key pieces that you just fall in love with and you can't replace, right?
I have a friend here in Fernie, and he's done some incredible things. But he doesn't have any of the gear left from his old days as a mountaineer. And he's trying to find the same quality from modern fabrics, from modern gear. And he just can't find the same quality of gear as he had in like the late 90s, early 2000s. And it's quite funny. I think there's also a pressure to go lighter, because no one was really looking at the weight of garments back then. But now he's bike packing, and he's looking at the weight of garments, and he's pressured by things. And it's just like, just use what works. Volume's probably more important, really.
Totally, right? And I was talking to a dude about my Divide run today, and just my rain gear was not high quality, lightweight, compressible stuff, and it just takes up so much room, and it's so much heavier than the stuff I have now, you know? And it's like, you can't, I mean, tell people to go just whatever you've got, like strap it on your bike and go. But it's just like the more volume your shit takes up in your bag, it's less volume you have for food and water kind of thing. So it's almost like, man, I should get this, but it just costs so much more money, right, to get the really compressible, quote, high quality stuff, right?
But volume is back in fashion thanks to Lachlan Morton. You know, we're allowed to use panniers and stuff again.
Right, yeah, totally.
And you know, if you're going for a run on the Divide and you're planning on sleeping, I have to believe you should take your best rain gear, even if it weighs twice as much
Yeah.
and takes twice as much space. You know, take those extra things that might give you comfort because you're going to be out there longer. And that's what's, to me, that the mid-packers, so like people coming in 30 days, that's incredible because you're pushing yourself and you're out there for so much longer than
That's
the fast.
right. Yeah. Yeah, the dude I was talking to today about that, he was he attempted last year and he said he just got fed up with the weather. He just wasn't into it. He wasn't doing it for any. So he pulled out kind of in Montana, but he said he saw a lot of people pulling out and he was looking at their gear and he was like, you don't have anything. Like, do you realize what, like the year I did it and all those people, I'm not saying anything bad about the people, like what, 15 people got pulled out of Canada hitting their SOSs. And I'm thinking that, well, yeah, because it's fucking winter still in Rockies in June. It's winter. Like there was still snow. It snowed in Montana. Like you have to have all the things. And if you're going to look at even, you know, even Megan, she had a lot of shit on her bike compared to say something like Sophie Ann would bring. Right. So I think newbies kind of look at what they see on other bikes. And it's like, oh, all I need is like a couple feed bags, a top tube bag and a dangle bag, you know, and two bottles and a little tiny pack that I put my bivy in. It's like, no, dude, it's like you're going to need to dress down to at least minus 15. Like you need to think of that. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I might be wrong, but from my understanding, Justina's basically didn't have a sleep kit with him.
No.
If you look at the size of his tail fin rack, no. He had clothes, he had layers, he was packing a lot of garments to help him get to the finish. Whereas, you know, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, it just depends if you're gonna sleep every night. Like I don't know how many times I got a hotel, but it's like more than probably I wanted to. But after like 2 or 3 days outside, you just want a bed. You just want a bed. You want a shower. And get cleaned up. Like people who do it day after day and sleep outside every day, God, I bow down to them. Like, holy shit. Like to be able to keep yourself, to manage your body and keep it clean and keep your undercarriage clean enough that you're not going to like salt scrub all the skin off your crotch without having a proper shower or bath every few days. Like I bow down to them, but I had to get a hotel.
You got to do the 2-to-1 or the 3-to-1. It just, you have to.
I think
you might outside, sleep outside. It just has to be done.
I think I was about like 3-to-1, maybe.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so goddamn expensive, right? It's so expensive because, you know, US, I got a shithole for like $100 a month in Del Norte. And it was just like, all right, whatever. I'm going to stay in this. It was like, what's that Canadian? It was like $125, you know, like for this shithole that I was going to spend six hours in, you know, like, but yeah, and I guess that's the thing. So like these, like the super fast elite who are basically hitting hotels every day, you know, doing 350, 400K a day and then hitting a hotel every single day. Like they don't really need to carry a lot. Like I remember Megan on the Buckshot, right? She didn't have anything on her bike. There's nothing there. I had the normal things. She had nothing. And it's like, well, of course, because she's going to finish in 18 hours and I'm going to be out there for a day and a half. Right. So I'm going to either sleep in the dirt, I'm going to sleep in, I end up getting a hotel. But it's like her plan and her ability allows her to just, you know, get done in less than a day. Right. Which is incredible. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish on that event I'd gone, like, hindsight's a beautiful thing, but I had that as I'm going to do my full kit because I want to test how it works. And then the heat buried me. And because I kind of got in that chase mode, I wanted to be up front, I just buried myself. And the weight of the bike, so many mistakes, but great learning. And luckily I had the stuff with me, so I did have a 2-hour sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was the same year I did it.
Yeah.
How fast did you do that?
I think it was about 23 hours or something.
Right.
I mean, I was out front, I think first 100 miles, 180 Ks, I was lead rider and crushing it. But we hit that, like that sandy section that went past that church and all that kind of stuff
where we weren't supposed to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I went through there, and I'm kind of looking back, like, where is everyone else? But I guess I had a mountain bike. Everyone else kind of had gravel bikes. And then I started getting cramps, and I ended up getting off the bike, and I'm like walking like a robot, and no one comes and catches me. I get past that gate where we had to kind of pass that gate and get onto the highway. And my body just started shutting down, like, and I just hit it far too hard, and the heat had hit far too much, and I absolutely crushed me. I went to the store that was open late for you,
the restaurant.
So I went to the store next, and I was in such a daze. I was like, I need water, and I couldn't do the maths. I needed 3 liters of water, so I needed like 6 500-mil bottles, and for some reason I bought 20. And then because I'd spent the money on them, I tried to like pack as many as possible. So I like, had like 4 in my jersey, and I had 3 liters of water. So it now made the bike even heavier. And my brain was just not functioning. And we got on that highway, and I found that highway very intimidating and not safe at all.
Yeah, going up toward Ashcroft, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then just people just kept coming by me. And Megan, not even sweating. Hi.
Fuck you, Megan.
And then I just kind of realized as well. I was like, okay, well, you know, just I'm going to make it home. But, you know, it's still taken her like this long to pass me.
Yeah, you were giving her.
I'd gone that hard in the morning.
Yeah.
And I'd made the errors, you know.
Yeah, and that's funny. That's an interesting, because I had the same experience of my very first bike packing race, and it was the AR700, the point to point from like Coleman to Hinton, and I got to Highwood House, which was the first resupply. It's like 105 KN, and I was a noob, but I knew some people, and Dean Anderson was there, the single speeder, you know, Dean, and I saw him there, and I'm like, I shouldn't be here. And I felt tired. Like, I was like, I pushed way too fucking hard if I'm here with you, Dean. And I said that to him. I said, I shouldn't be here with you. And then I scratched on that, because after that, it's like a big climb into Kananaskis. And I remember it was so fucking, again, the heat, man. People who don't know Canada very well, like, say, my American listeners or our American friends, don't really realize how fucking hot it can get up here. Like, the year I did that yo-yo was 42 in Summerland Celsius. I don't know what that is. Like 110. I don't know what it is. It's fucking hot. I can sound like the forest was going to burn up. And so it's Canada's a weird place for that. Like frigid winters, but stifling hot summers, depending on where you are in the country, you know?
Yeah. And the heat is the worst.
Yeah. And
we not have these events either just be 40 degrees or with rain and -2, that'd be great.
I know. And of course, all these events that you and I do, they're all in the Rockies, and it's just like, you never know. It's going to rain, it's going to snow, it's going to be 40 degrees, you know, it's drought, forest fires. There's so many things.
We just have one that's 25 degrees in the day, 12 degrees in the night, and maybe a full moon. That'd be great.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Tell me one of your fondest memories of some of the events that you've done, maybe one event that really stands out to you.
Oh, I mean, the sunset this year, sunrise this year at the Lost Elephant was unreal. And I know a few people sort of mentioned that, the reds, and it was just incredible. And one of those things where I just stood and looked, didn't even take a photo. It was just, this is a moment.
It's for you. This is for me only. Yeah.
Oh, it was quite special. I don't have the best eyesight, so it says it all.
It's hard to describe to people what it's like. I'm sure you might find a way to describe it, but it's like that idea of riding through the night and then the feeling you get when the sun comes up. It's almost goosebumpy. It's almost like, oh, finally the sun's coming up, right? And then you see it, and then you just look at it, and it picks you up. It's that circadian rhythm idea, right? It's very triggering, positively triggering in the human body.
And actually, the sunset at Activa Epica,
Yeah.
it was so stunning that the other rider, who was kind of my competition for the day, Ryan, I'd made a few mistakes and I was on the chase, and he saw I was coming up, and he saw look was looking at the sunrise, and he just stopped his bike and just was like, I'm gonna enjoy this.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm not. But it was incredible.
Sunset or sunrise?
That's
Sunset?
the set, but in
Yeah.
the prairie, oh my God,
Yeah.
sunset in the prairies is on a clear day, that was something special.
Yeah.
And actually, that event, and I'm dreaming that Cold Ride's gonna have this, is I came home to the Sugar Shack, and I got cheers from a few of the volunteers, and that was great. But throughout the next couple of hours, everyone else started coming in, and every person that came through the door got louder and louder cheers.
Yeah.
So that evening was very, very memorable. Just waiting for the next rider, that was really cool. That vibe of community and stuff was really cool. And
I think that's such a huge driver, right? Is the community of people that are involved.
yeah.
Whether they ride or not. Like even that little 24-hour thing I did last year, people would show, I put it out there on social and people came out to ride with me, which is so special, right? Do a couple laps with somebody and especially when you were kind of alone a lot. Although like Doug Dunlop was there so much for me. Like we rode so many laps together. But then, people bring me lunch or bring me some food or snacks or Phil from he's moved back east, but yeah, he brought me like, did he bring me like a hot thermos of food or something? I was like, oh my God, dude. Like it's just the support that you get from people and the camaraderie and the laughs and the people who, if you know, you know, right? Like if you know, you know. It's just such a beautiful community.
I have to say, all those bikepackers out there, like, definitely, you're gonna have the best time doing your own solo trips, but do a Grand Depart. Come and
Oh,
meet people.
totally.
If you're gonna do any, do the Lost Elephant. If you're up for it, do the Lost Elephant, because it's got the best community vibe, and maybe Cold Ride's gonna have that vibe as well. I think maybe even more so.
Yeah, well, Nathan has to do some has something to do with it, a lot to do with it, right? So he always brings a good vibe to stuff. Yeah.
He really does. He's a great guy to have in your corner. I really appreciate getting to know him this year. I mean, this whole year has been amazing to get to know more people in the community. Yeah, I feel like I've found my people, even
Nice.
though they're all over the country. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So encourage everyone to get out and meet more people in the community if they can. I'd love to host a bike packing, super casual, let's go and ride to 50 Ks to Summer Lake and have a sleep out and try and
Yeah.
get a few more people, because I know they've got the Vancouver Island bike packing collective, and there's some lady shredders around here that I know they get together and they go bike packing, but I'd love to just get a bit more of a community built based around it as well.
Yeah, get everyone together for a little rep, right? Going for a
Yeah.
little. That's what I missed about the Bikepack Canada summits. I just haven't had the time or energy. I thought about, oh, maybe I should try to do something, but I haven't. I don't know. I just haven't done it. But the summits were so awesome, exactly for that. You get a bunch of people, some of them ride, some of them don't. You do a little bikepacking trip overnighter before the weekend, and yeah, it's just great. And yeah, doing solo is one thing, but it's like to be able to do something with other people. And the other thing too is like I always found that any bikepacking I did all was always an event because of time, right? I could never really find the time. Like if I was gonna go bikepacking, it had to be an event because with the family, I couldn't just like leave every weekend and go do whatever I wanted to, right? So the event was something that I always looked forward to. But then, meeting just in the last couple of years, meeting a woman who also bike packs and to be able to go just party pace with another person and just like it's chill. It's like you're just going places, right? You don't have to be anywhere, stop and take photos or go for a swim or just when it's chill like that, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm really gonna ever quote race again. Like, I don't know if I'm gonna, I'd rather just enjoy it now, I think.
I have a couple of guys here that are definitely, they're fast riders.
Yeah.
We all have to, and I love bike packing with them. We have to have sort of a chat about the pace, though, because one person goes a little quick, and before you know it, the whole pack's like crushed themselves, and we've done our whole goal like 4 or 5 hours faster than was planned.
Yeah. And
But
you're having lunch instead of dinner. It's like this,
yeah.
no, this wasn't the plan. I didn't bring enough food for
Yeah, but that's
our...
kind of why I would like to just party pace it and have those camp outs.
Yeah.
Take a tent, not take a bivvy, like
Yeah.
more of an experience.
Yeah, I did one with Sean from Bike Bike and my girlfriend, and we went and did a, was it Little Elbow over just near Bragg Creek. And it was super chill, and it was, even though it was an overnighter, you bring the same shit, right? Whether you're doing 3 weeks or one night. But it was so chill to be able to like sit and cook and have a tent and just have all your things, right? And it was just so nice, have a fire. Yeah, it's just nice to get out like that. I mean, I'm not discounting, the pleasures of pushing oneself on a, in an event and through the night and all that stuff. I've got some great memories of doing stupid shit like that and sleep deprived. And I was going to touch on the when you're talking about the sunset thing. I always find sunsets are beautiful, but they're hard, especially when you're out multi-days, because that sunset triggers that sleep monster, right? For me, it does. And it's just like I feel
Yeah.
the lights. I try to not run my lights as long as possible into the night. 'Cause as soon as the lights come on, it seems like the sunset and turning the lights on trigger this, like your body's like, what are we doing? It's time to sleep. I don't understand what we're doing.
I sort of get to around 2 a.m. I think two
Yeah.
a.m. dark time, and usually if you can, if I can push through that,
Yeah.
then I'm done. But you know what? Normally, I think I'm a bit of a night owl though. That is forced to get up early. Like I don't want to be getting up at 6 every day, but it's just that's life,
Yeah.
and I've kind of got into that routine. And yeah, I quite like the evening, especially if the stars come out. I mean, I can't see them, but I've got pretty bad long distance vision, but like just knowing that they're out and the moon's out, and yeah, I like the early evening. I don't like the early morning. That's where it's hard, I think.
Yeah, especially when you've pushed the sleep monster away for so long. And
Yes.
it's
Yeah.
funny how the body just will, it's almost like you can't stop it. Like there's strategies, stopping and moving and eating and drinking and doing activities to kind of keep your body moving to not sleep, but to fall asleep on the bike is something pretty special. Like it's a weird, 'cause your body just does it, right?
Yeah, I've never been there, and it is interesting. I just don't know what it feels like. I know it will happen one day.
It's like for me, I just remember on the yo-yo coming back, I was in Nelson and it's on like just a two track leading into town and it's flat. But I just remember uncontrollably just the tunnel. This tunnel just kind of like closes in on your vision and it just kind of closes, 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 and then it's like black. You can still hear and feel, you feel the wind on your skin, but you're kind of like out. And then I just remember the tilt. And then it was like, whoa, Jesus. And you kind of wake up and pull yourself back. And then, yeah, I remember stopping, filtering water, and then continuing on, forgetting to put the cap on my bottle. So I was down to like 1 liter because I lost the cap, right? And I used it as a trash bin. I just put it on my fork and I just used it to shove like wrappers and shit in because I had no cap for it.
That's a good
Yeah,
idea.
right?
That is a good idea.
Use as a bear spray holder maybe or something. But yeah, it's weird because the body will just do it. You can try and like you're trying to hold your eyes open, right? You're just like, ugh, but your body's just like, no, it's sleepy time.
I've definitely been in the aero bars and like thought it was a good idea. Close my eyes and then
Just for a
gone like,
minute.
what
Yeah.
are you
Just
thinking?
for a minute.
Like, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, it's funny. We laugh, but it can be so unsafe, right? Like especially that Nelson stretch. If I'd, it was basically like I can't remember what creek or whatever's beside it, but it was just like basically microwave size rocks going down to a creek, and that's where I was headed, right? Until I woke up and, oh yeah, man, it could be, yeah, not a good scene at all. Yeah,
I mean,
but
we've lost incredible riders to the sleep monster, so.
yeah, for sure.
Definitely not something you want to push too far.
No, definitely. What are you going to do? So you've got Cold Ride this winter. Do you have anything else going on this winter you want to do?
I want to do the drift. That would just depend on, I think Dave Woe is pretty keen to do it. And then Darren is a bit kind of all over the place with work. So he's a definitely maybe. But I'd like to go there. That one's kind of nice because you can pay to enter, and then if you can defer your entry to the following year, I think.
Oh, yeah.
That would be the only other winter option this year. Looked into some things, but family time just doesn't work out. So winter ultras are particularly challenging, I think, for logistics. So it's so great to have one on our doorstep. That's very exciting.
I'm on the fence. I really want to come down and I want to do it. I want to do it, but I just feel so underprepared physically. Just I could have find the time to train, but with this new job and stuff, it's still my schedule's not like I'm not comfortable with any schedule yet. So
Not give yourself some grace and do the short course, and
I
then
want to do the long one though.
of course you do. Of
I
course you do.
want to do the long one.
Yeah,
And it's really, that's not, I mean, in the winter, I've done 100K in the winter. What is it, 135, 140,
130, yeah.
130? So it's like, it's not impossible. I mean, it is a day ride depending on conditions. Like that, if I'm going to be pushing my bike for several hours, then that's what it is too. But
On the upside, though, I've got a feeling that if you're pushing your bike, there's already going to be a nice post-hole trail for you to follow.
yeah, well, exactly. The advantages of being like the mid slash back mid pack.
Yeah, I don't know. Nathan, I told Nathan I was going to go and look at the course, and he didn't tell me that it hadn't been anything, like no one had cut the sled track in or anything.
Yeah.
So I get to it, 14 hours into my day, and it's just a white field. I messaged him, I'm like, well, this isn't in great shape. And then I'm like, well, the thing is, he didn't say not to do it. So I'm going like, I'm gonna post hold the living shit out of this
Yeah. Who's grooming it? Is James gonna groom that stuff? Is it
I'm not
James
too
McPhee? Is that his name? James?
I really don't know.
Okay.
I think even I don't even maybe even Nathan's getting out on it.
Yeah.
Hopefully we're gonna have truck traffic on all those back roads. The sleds are gonna be have cut in the trail properly. He said it's setting up pretty good.
Yeah.
So, but you never know, right? Like the next 6 weeks could be unpredictable. It could be slushy, it could be soft.
And contrary to what people think, sled tracks suck.
Yeah, they're pretty
Right?
hard. You need to go down to some seriously soft.
Yeah. They're churned. They're all churned up. Like the what like a snowmobile will go through and churn the center up, and then if you can ride the skinny, ride in the ski track,
Yeah.
that's where the
And
traction is.
if you lose your front tire off, like into a rut, you'll just be sent flying. Like
Yeah.
on descent, probably even tougher than climb.
It sounds quote unquote fun. I don't know. I think it'd be fun. I'll have to f
I
figure out.
think it is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be the key to it.
Yeah.
Just keep everyone motivated and have a good time.
Yeah. We'll have to look into it some more. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see what happens. And what about summer? What are you going to do this summer? The usual?
Scheming away, but I'd like to maybe do the Cross Washington.
Oh, yeah.
But that one, because then I can get, if I was to do the Cross Washington, I could kind of ride home. Like it's
Yeah.
pretty close, really. Maybe. It depends on the winter, and but it's not also not far for the family to pick us up. But that does rely on my whether my mum can come and look after the family.
Right.
Because originally she was going to come and look after them for me to do the Tour Divide, but I think it's still just too much of a big ask. And that's at a terrible time of year, right? The Tour Divide is right when school's finishing. It's right when your kids are the school, even the school days are super unpredictable. They're not like normal school days. Like they'll be like doing a nature walk to check mushrooms and then this or that. Like there's not a proper learning structure, it seems, towards the end of the school year. So My son seems to always be a little bit more crazy, I think is the right
Oh
term.
yeah. Hey, you mentioned, I mean, this is a quick pivot, and if you're comfortable talking about it, I'll ask. But what's the neurodivergency of your son? What's he dealing with?
He has autism, but
Oh,
it's
okay.
definitely like level one, like super like entry level autism.
Right. Kind of like mine. I think I always thought that we're kind of all on some sort of autistic spectrum. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I think the big thing with him is he's 8 years old and he still only eats like 20 different foods, and he is very like black and white with what he understands. He doesn't understand dad jokes and word, and
Who
that kind of
does?
So it can be tough. We've got to be careful with how I communicate with him because he can take things the wrong way. And then he has ADHD, and we have him medicated, and we've actually got to a really good place. His concentration at school has got like way better, and that's really the choice, is to so that he can do better at school, and it is going well.
Nice.
So
Well, thanks for sharing that. I know maybe I'm prying a little bit. I tend to like to ask difficult questions.
no, I think that like it needs to be talked about because there's a lot of parents struggling out there, and we've struggled, and we've pushed for the assessments, and we're receiving really good help. Because if we weren't, I think we'd be really struggling.
Like with the school side of things, like him
No,
getting.
with everything, with everything, with
Wow.
family life, with school, with it's challenging. As you hope your kids are going to grow up and they're going to reach certain milestones, but realistically, he's 8 years old, but he's probably more like five and a half, six, and he's it's tough. Lots of parents are going through it, right? He's not alone in his class, and his class is only like, I don't know, five or six kids. He goes to a French school, so he's got very intimate schooling, which I love, and I'm so stoked for, because otherwise I think he would get lost in a bigger school.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Living in small towns and having smaller schools and smaller student population. I mean, when I hear, about, say, some of my friends that grew up in cities, I'm like, well, how big was your graduating class? I was like, oh, I don't know, like 500 kids. It's like, what? Like huge schools, right? I think my graduating class in my little town, I didn't go to graduation, but literally it was probably a dozen.
Well, the school, Isabella Dickin, the big school here in Fernie, has about 100 kids per year. Well, whereas the French school's like 10. 10 is a big class.
Yeah, and what a great opportunity for kids to learn French, especially in Canada. Like, I don't know. I grew up in Eastern Canada. I can't speak French. I can kind of understand it-ish sometimes, but it's like, I wish I could speak French. Like,
Well, I haven't learned French, even though my wife is from Quebec and she's
France?
multi.
You wouldn't say France.
Yeah, France is not from France, but she speaks. And the family would have loved me for me to speak French. But the next best thing is I could do is to ensure that my son spoke multiple languages and understood his culture and his history. So.
You should try to learn, dude. I think it would be interesting. No, come on. Don't, come on. Give yourself a chance.
I've got to focus on learning how to do suspension and wheel truing.
Well, take those, educate yourself in French.
I definitely have a very mechanical mind. I do not have a mastery of even the English language.
I hear that. I hear that. That's funny. I'm the same way. Sometimes I wonder how I even speak to people. Have you built a wheel before?
No.
Oh, I should do, man. I've built a few. It's been a while, but it's gratifying. Yeah.
I would like to.
It's
And I
not as
thought about,
hard as you think it is.
I thought about getting a wheel truing jig just so I can start replacing my own spokes and just have a bit of better understanding of like how that all works. But then you look at the price of the tools and you kind of go, even cheap. And I have a store here in Fernie, Gear Hub Sports. They look after me, so getting a spoke replaced is very affordable, and it's the time, right? Because time is money. Time, you know. So, yeah, excuses.
No, not necessarily. I hear what you're saying. True. I had a stand. I don't know where it went in the grand scheme of me moving out of a house. I don't know where that went. I had a super old park one, but you can do it in your triangle. You can do it in your bike. You can set it up, you know, even just with tie wraps as your sensors, and you can kind of make do.
I've promised myself to at least try and change a few spokes.
Yeah,
because I have terrible amounts of broken wheels in my home.
You ride hard. You ride your shit hard.
Yeah, I hate it. Every time you break them. It's like it's either hub maintenance or broken spoke or something like that.
Well, when you do miles like that, right? That's the thing. Yeah, when you do big miles, you're gonna wear stuff out. I'm waiting. Actually, that's the thing. If I'm gonna do this cold ride thing, I my rear free hub body's failing slowly. I can feel it. You know, it's kind of a cheaper one, and I can feel it clicking in there. And I'm like, I better get that thing replaced. I'm gonna get stranded.
I think the biggest tragedy, most of the fat bikes that are being released these days, is none of them are being produced with good hubs. Like you used to always get like a Rocky Mountain Blizzard would always be supplied with a DT Swiss Big Ride. And these days it's like just a really, really poor quality hub, even on the top end bikes. And it's like, not making it easy for people.
Well, like, I think it's all just a price point thing.
Right. Yeah.
Like it really is. I mean, because, you know, a good rear hub, you know, $550, you know, for a good hub kind of thing, where they could put these shitty, you know, Chinese ones in, you know, for
big money difference for sure.
Yeah. Especially, you know, you don't really think about what's going on back there. Right. But when you have it, like I've got some DT Swiss stuff that's and Hope stuff and all that shit's bomber, but I don't know. Actually, I don't know what kind of hub is on my fat bike, but I can feel it because I've gone through so many cheap ones in the day, especially when, you know, if you're, I mean, I'm pretty strong. I'm a strong climber and I'm heavy. So you're putting a lot of load on the Pauls in that back of that thing. So if it's just a standard Paul kind of like three Paul hub setup, yeah, you're going to tear through that in no time.
It is the boringest thing to go in a bike shop and buy like 200. Worth of bearings to fix your hubs.
Yeah, it's not fun.
It's not. You're like, I want to be buying something cool.
Yeah, well, you just buy an entire hub and build yourself a wheel. That's the idea, right? Yeah, you can do it. If I've built wheels because I used to break them. I used to try to learn how to jump, and I cannot jump worth it. I gave it up years ago, but I would taco so many wheels trying to learn how to jump. I just couldn't do it. And I think wheels are super strong. Like I've got a set of carbon wheels, like the only carbon thing I have on that bike on timber. And I think it's probably got like 7,500 K on it and they're arrow straight and all the spokes are there. It does, you know, quality goes a long way. If you're going to spend your money on anything that you don't want to have to fuck with ever again, is drop it on a good set of wheels. I really believe that.
Could not agree less. Wheels are where it's at. You could have a steel frame bike and it might be the heaviest thing in the world and you could change it into just being a rocket with a good set of wheels.
Totally. It makes all the difference, right?
Yeah.
100%. But yeah, just do it. Take one of those wheels. There's a really good I'll try to find that link and send it to you. But I remember there's a really basic website and it just showed you like it's super easy. This is your key spoke, this is where you start and this is what you do. And I've even built I used to ride motorcycle trials bikes in Squamish and I tore the spline off of a rear hub because it was just old and shitty. And I went and like bought a new hub, bought the spokes and then just installed it. And that's on a motorcycle. A little different because the spokes are like friggin' whatever, 3 mil, you know, they're fat. But it's not as hard as people think. It just takes patience and
it's more just time.
But you could do it watching a movie with your kid. You just sit on the floor and lace up a wheel. You don't have to like true it up. Just lacing it up. It's like crocheting a scarf. You're just kind of like lacing your wheel up kind of thing. You can do it. It's easy.
Yeah. I'm sure I can.
It's just getting you just for Rich. You, particularly with the miles, you want to make sure it's strong. Maybe build it and then take it to the shop. to say, hey, double check my work, please. Because they'll have a spoke tensioner, right? They can tension it. Or you can play it like a guitar. Like you can spin it and go ding, 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 listen to your spoke tensions and then change the ones that are kind of just acoustically off when you're listening to it. You can kind of do it that way as well. It's fun. It's, I don't know. It's a good skill to have, especially if you break wheels like you all the time.
Well, I've only broken the one wheel properly.
Oh, properly. A proper break.
But yeah.
Well, man, it was good to talk to you today. I'm going to let you go. Is your family back from skiing yet?
Yeah, from what I can hear, there's a bath being run.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But it's early for bath time.
Oh, must be cold.
Or he got soaked. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah. Well, it was good to connect.
Yeah, it was really nice to talk to you, Steve. Yeah. And I hope you do decide to join us for a cold ride.
One way or the other, I'd like to come down. Whether I ride or hang out with the microphone, I want to come down. But I want to ride.
I think it could be just a cool event to come and hang out at.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Especially, I think Nathan said they're going to do it in a scouts hall. So there's going to be a nice inside area for people to finish at.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. I'm still chomping for more information, but it's just because I like to plan and feel like I'm in control of something.
Ah, I see. Control freak.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
Well, particularly in a winter ultra, I think you want to have your ducks in a row, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've put out equipment requirements, which is really key.
Right.
And I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, man. All right, well, I will see you there one way or the other. I'll see you there, okay?
Well, have a great weekend. Happy holidays.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you and yours. Yeah, I hope you have a good one. Spoil that kid of yours.
Yep, there's obviously Lego.
It's got to be Lego. Yeah, what else?
Christmas.
What else are you going to cut your feet open on walking around the house?
Yeah, honestly, I was pretty tempted to try and find him a new bike. But with all the shipping challenges and stuff,
oh my it's God. Just like, yeah.
It's not going to happen.
This is probably the first year I haven't, and I'm probably going to try to do it in the future. It's just support small businesses. And I didn't get anything from Amazon this year. I mean, mind you, not all small businesses, local business. Like I went to Canadian Tire and I went to The Source, but the local shops here, right? Rather than getting everything online, and we're kind of forced to do that, really.
Yeah, they do a little buy local like raffle here leading up to the holidays.
Yeah.
Buying local, and you get your whatever your cost is, gives you entries into a raffle.
Nice.
It can be. You know, it's hard to buy things in a small mountain town, though. Like, it's you know, you can't be too critical on yourself. Personally, I actually know the people that work at Amazon, and I like to think that when I am purchasing things through Amazon, I'm just helping them out because they get paid per parcel, you know?
Oh, the people who deliver in your area?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know people around here that do that as well. They say it's quite lucrative, obviously, because people are ordering Amazon shit like crazy. But, you know, we have local Invermere based companies here that make their own stuff. I can't say what, because my girlfriend will know what I got her for Christmas. But it's like, you know, it felt good this year to kind of support, like keep the money in the town for the most part. You know, like it feels good. Anyway,
we have this amazing store called Coal Town here in Fernie. And it's just this beautiful little boutique that sells like jewelry and nice things for the ladies mostly.
Yeah.
And I've completed it. Like I bought everything in the store over the years as gift. And it's kind of like, sorry, honey, there's nothing left for you. I don't know what we're solvent. Giving is a challenging thing to someone who has everything that they want. She has me and she has my son.
What more is there? That's right.
Togetherness.
That's right. Yeah.
Could you maybe not go and ride your bike on Christmas Day?
Oh, yeah, but that's what I do every year. I go
and ride Rafa my bike. Festive 500.
Well, man, like I say, it was really good to connect, and I'll see you in February.
Yeah.
And Merry Christmas to France and your boy. And
thank you very much.
I hope you have an awesome one.
Yeah, you too.
All right.
Take it nice easy. Talking.
Yeah, you too, man. Yeah, this will be out soon. I'll let you know. I'll keep you in the loop.
Cool, man.
Okay, right on. Take care. I want to thank Andy again for his time and thank all of you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Andy's a great guy. I haven't spent a lot of time, like I said in the podcast, we've interacted a couple times, but never really sat down to have a good, shoot the shit session. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I hope you did too. I didn't mention this at the beginning, but it would be really great if you could send me voice intros, and I don't blame you. You haven't heard from me for a while, so why would you send me any? But I'd love it if you would send me some. It's a really great way to engage with the community and hear about my listeners. So don't be shy. Whip out your device, record me something, and send it to myback40podcast@gmail.com, and I'll pop it into the show. Great way to touch base. Also want to thank Lakeside Bikes for supporting me. I want to thank Redshift Sports for supporting me. I want to thank Graham Mann and Rollingdale Cycles for being a sponsor of the podcast, something I didn't mention at the beginning. I talk about my Thai bike all the time. Rollingdale Cycles has fabricated a fucking amazing rig for me, and I was the first person to ride a Rollingdale bike to Mexico, and that bike is holding up. It's a beautiful ride. It's comfortable, and it's built for me. So when I'm riding it, it just feels like an extension. They are an investment. A custom bike is an investment, but it's an investment into the future. It's not something that you're going to just sell the next year and buy something else. We were talking about environmental impact in terms of buying bikes. And I know people who buy a new bike every single year. Every single year, they're buying a new bike. And that's great. That's great if you can do that. But is that necessary? Are things changing so much that you need to replace your bike every year? And we talked about it. Especially carbon. I'm not going to shit on carbon. Carbon fiber is an amazing material. It's strong, it's compliant. But those things last forever. They'll never go away. I could bury my titanium bike in the ground and eventually it'll turn to dirt. So that's something that I consider when I'm buying bikes. And I admit, I talked about it. I have carbon fiber wheels. Those wheels will be around forever. They're not ever going to go anywhere. Someone will have to use them for some art piece when they get retired. But it's like, if you're ever thinking about getting a new bike and you're not sure where to invest your money, but you want something that you're gonna maybe be buried with yourself, consider Rollingdale Bikes. Check them out, rdcycle.com. All right, guys, that's all I've got this week. I'm gonna really try to get back on the train. I apologize for my absence. I'm still here. I'm still grinding away. I still love you guys all to death. And I hope you have a great, safe, happy holiday with your loved ones. And what I've been doing this week, I talk about it all the time, and I've been receiving some as well from friends, is reach out to the people in your life who you can't physically be with this Christmas, this holiday. I'm gonna call it Christmas. That's what I'm used to calling it. So I know it's maybe it's I don't know. I don't know. Whatever. The whole thing is like, what do we call it? Do we say Merry Christmas? Do we say Happy Holidays? Merry Holiday? It's fucking it's Christmas. It's an old pagan ritual that we've been that Christianity has developed and evolved and blah 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 blah. It's Christmas. So this Christmas, reach out to those loved ones that you can't be close to, and just so they know you're thinking about them. Sometimes that's the best gift you can give somebody. It's just a con. It's just a hello. Hey, how you doing? Thinking about you. I've been receiving and sending those all week. And it's nice. It's really nice. And like I said at the beginning, this time of year can be really difficult for a lot of people. It's difficult financially. It's difficult for their mental health because not only are we dealing with seasonally affected depression disorder, the days are short. I mean, that's why we have lights outside, right? Is to kind of the nights are so long. We have lights on our homes to kind of light up the night, right? To make it beautiful. And a lot of people struggle. So keeping that in mind, just reach out to the people that you love, check in on them, because they may not have said anything, but a lot of people might be struggling this time of year with their mental health. And now's a great time to reach out, say hello, tell them that you're thinking about them, tell them that you love them, wish them a Merry Christmas. And if they're close to you, maybe connect for a glass of wine or eggnog or something, whatever your drink of choice is. And yeah, celebrate this year. Okay. As usual, I love you guys, and we'll talk again soon. Keep the rubber side down.